Right, welcome to today's first concurrent session, which is what can claims management teams learn from social workers? My name's Colin Yellowlees, I'm from RGA, and I'm here to introduce Ian. So Ian currently works as an associate director in the financial services team at EY, having previously spent a number of years working as head of actuarial reporting at TAL. He originally qualified in the UK and worked for Aviva for 6 years before heading out here in 2002 to sample life in Sydney. He is currently on the Life Financial Reporting Subcommittee and previously was heavily involved in LAGIC implementation and discussions for the Institute. Ian and his wife Maura were previously foster carers until having their own daughter a couple of years ago. Ian is still very proud of his Scottish nationality and continues to face a long losing battle to convince his daughter that her allegiances in the sporting world should be to his country rather than choosing her mother's, Ireland, or heaven forbid the Australian team. I also must say this is probably one of the few times you'll see Ian in front of such a large crowd actually not wearing his kilt as well. So he normally very proudly sports his kilt at events like this, but not today. Anyway, over to Ian.
Hi everyone. Thank you very much for coming along, giving me the chance to present. Thank you to Colin. Colin was very helpful in me putting together this paper. About 6 months ago, I came up with an idea of a title, which is always dangerous to do a title for a presentation before you actually know what you're going to say. But this is my title, What Can Claims Management Teams Learn from Social Workers? And thankfully, the answer is not nothing, or else this would be a very short presentation. So is this particularly a scientific presentation? Is it a detailed technical presentation? No. But it's based on a bit of research I've done and hopefully there'll be some interesting stuff to share with you. So the content, the structure of the report of the presentation is essentially sort of almost my thought process and my sort of process of how I've put this together. So why look at claims management? And then I guess why not, why look at things slightly differently, or why look at a different angle that maybe hasn't been thought about quite as much before. And then going on from that, looking at social workers and how does their world, differentiate from claims management, have some similarities, have some crossovers, and then what are the differences and how might that impact things? And then finally, I guess from that, where I'm seeing some challenges in claims management, what might be some of the social work ideas and solutions that maybe should be considered when trying to solve some of the issues that mainly life insurers are trying to deal with these days. So I guess just before I start, can I get a quick show of hands? Is anyone here actually a social worker or trained as a social worker? No? So question two, is anyone here related to a social worker? So 1, 2, 3... And a last question, keep your hands up if you're related to social work. And does anyone here want to be a social worker? So no, not many takers. And I guess it's interesting because, I've married a social worker and it's kind of being an actuary and a social worker getting together. It's kind of like sort of equalizing, I guess, my salary versus, I guess, her good work in the community, say. So it's almost like as a couple we kind of balance that out a little bit. But she had no idea what an actuary was before she met me, and I guess I've learnt a lot more around what social workers do since I obviously met her. So touching a little bit on the why look at this thing, what are the challenges around claims and claims management? This chart is based on APRA data for insurance companies, life insurance companies in Australia, and it effectively goes back 5 years and says what's been the average profit, or the profit every quarter on two blocks of business, group disability income, which is the hard line, and individual disability income, which is the dotted line. And it goes up and down every quarter as companies strengthen reserves or make changes or that sort of thing. But the overall trend is obviously it's hard to make money consistently on group insurance, on disability income insurance. And this possibly masks some of the issue where there's probably more losses being offshored through reinsurance companies to their parents. So the real position may well be slightly worse than this. It's been a long-term difficulty to make good money on disability income insurance for a number of reasons. And then what's also happened, alongside this is the number of people with this kind of cover and the number of claims is increasing. So therefore, pressure on resources are increasing as well. So claims management teams are finding themselves more and more under pressure. And companies are looking at, I guess, a number of ways of resolving this and of how to tackle this. And I put up there, I guess, how I see three of the main areas that you could tackle it being. So a lot of companies are putting money into data, and I know there's a lot of sessions going on around data, and particularly how do you predict how long claims will take to close and how you should manage that process. And then a lot of companies are investing money in systems. My entire presentation here is going to leave those two to one side and acknowledge that they are big areas, but I'm going to focus purely on the management of claims staff and, I guess, how do you get the right behaviours and the right kind of approaches within your actual claims staff, claims team staff. And the last, I guess, background of why I look at this, as part of the research into doing this presentation, I read quite a lot of old papers and thought, I'm sure this has been done before. And one of the good papers I came across was actually 15 years ago from John de Raven, who I've met a couple of times since and discussed with him. And he was very similar to me. He didn't work in a claims team, but he was just an interested valuation actuary at the time, looking at interviewing people who worked in the claims management functions and discussing things. And it's interesting some of the things that he comes out with in his paper 15 years ago, which are probably still very relevant, and talks about, there's risks if departments are under-resourced. And one of the things that he also has in his paper is that one of the worst things that can happen is if claims management function becomes a processing function and not a managing function. And I guess I read this and thought, yeah, that's a lot of that still rings true. 15 years on, the types of claims have probably changed quite a bit. And there's obviously been a huge increase in mental health, but the principles of, how claims managers, feel and how to get the best out of claims management teams are probably still valid. So how did I guess, go about doing some research for this? So what you have here is, I guess, symbols of the two parts of the equation. On the left, you've got the symbol for ALUCA, Australian Life Underwriting Claims Association. And I guess for me, having worked in the industry for a number of years, I took the opportunity to meet with a lot of people who work in claims management teams or who manage the claims management teams and, ask very open questions. It's interesting talking to life insurers and reinsurers and getting different perspectives and I guess understanding what the pressures are, how the world has changed for them. And that gives me a good background to then think, right, how can I then talk to social workers and see whether there's anything that they've had to deal with in a similar kind of way. So one of the questions that was raised when I presented this internally at EY before was, what actually do social workers do? And I kind of take it for granted that most people know, but I guess I asked my wife, what do you do? And the answer was sort of an agent for change. So it's really social workers are trying to help people make a change in their life. And that's really it. There may be a reason that they're forced to make a change, or there may be a reason they want to make a change, but it's really that agent for change. And I guess, social workers can be people who work in community services, they can work in prisons, they can work in youth centres, they can work in old folks' homes, they can be qualified or non-qualified, but I guess I'm putting all those under the banner, I guess, of social workers. And, it's a fairly wide banner, but that's... And they have an interaction with, I guess, what they call a client. Claims managers, which is mainly focused on life disability income claims managers, but could also incorporate workers' compensation. They focus on a customer. So I'm comparing the experience of dealing with a customer or a claimant with the experience for social workers dealing with a client. And then finally, I sort of thought, I know as actuaries we're traditional at not really being very good at jokes, and actuary jokes never tend to go down very well. But I thought I've not really heard many social work jokes. It's a bit of a serious subject sometimes, but social workers do also have jokes. And at the risk of kind of offending the two people apart from me who have relations as social workers, I will try a social work joke, which is really, how many social workers does it take to change a light bulb? And the answer is, it's just one, but the light bulb really has to want to change. which, you know, is kind of how, I guess, how social workers approach the world a little bit. There you go, I've got a laugh. I need to tell my wife that. Wait until you try the second one. So, results of all my kind of interviews and chats with people and thinking and research. So, where are the similarities, I guess, in just general work experience for social workers and for claims managers? So, the never-ending workload is something that I don't think any person working in claims staff ever has an empty in tray. And similarly, social workers never have a list of, oh, I've dealt with all my clients. there's continual that. And that brings, I guess, a level of pressure. And I guess it can be emotional pressure if you don't feel like you've necessarily got the time or the situation of the client or the customer is, I guess, affecting you from a mental point of view or an emotional level. So that can happen. The third party influence is interesting because speaking to the claims managers and the heads of claims teams, there's more and more influence from people like trustees of super funds. You've got the broker who has an interest in keeping the customer. And you've also got obviously pressures from within the organization. And from a social work point of view, it's the same concept. You often have pressures from obviously Department of Community Services. You might have pressures from the school if you're working with children. And I guess dealing with those third-party pressures is an interesting challenge that both professions are having to deal with. And I guess that getting the blame when things go badly is, life companies, I've worked there, I know when the results go bad, the first thing you do is go to the claims team and say, can you not close some more claims, or what are you doing in the claims team? And it's because it's such a big lever that companies have for, I guess, their financial results. And similarly, it's no surprise social workers can get the blame when things go wrong with obviously a very serious situation sometimes. And then there's other similarities around, I guess, the profession and how you get into the profession. And there's not many people that start off from university and say, hey, I really want to become a claims manager, or hey, I want to be a social worker for the rest of my life. And a lot of people do fall into it from various other professions. And generally, the people that stay there then have a passion for what they're doing and how they're doing it. I guess both sort of jobs are trying to develop their profession and trying to make, a community that shares information and shares experiences and shares learning and knowledge, and you know, that has a badge associated with learning and training, which is great. And that whole not always good advocates for themselves. Speaking to claims managers, it's very difficult sometimes to get a business case that will change. It's very difficult to justify getting funding for claims management initiatives, because a lot of decisions are made on a cost-benefit basis, and it's often hard to really show the benefit in dollar terms of trying to get funding into your claims management team. And similarly, social work is often a hard challenge for how do you measure success in terms of dollars that translate into the funding you require. And I guess finally, the media relations, I mean, it's not hard to find headlines. Sorry, it's a little bit blurred, but it can be either today, tonight, talking about insurance companies not paying out, or I managed to find one headline which managed to list police, social workers, doctors and teachers as all being causes, which I thought was quite a nice way of summarising almost everyone in one area. But, you know, it's hard to remember many, you know, positive. It's not often you see today, tonight talking about, you know, insurance company paying claims, or similarly the positive work that social workers do doesn't often get the headlines. So I guess acknowledging lots of similarities, questions then was, well, what about the differences? And some of the differences are really important and probably impact why, you know, some of this doesn't translate all the way through. But the pay is an interesting one. And there's some really good research around the level of pay for both claims managers and social workers. Again, acknowledging that there's quite a wide variety of people that could be classified as those two categories. But just looking at the social workers, the median pay for social workers in 2012 was $55,000, and the equivalent number for claims managers was $63,000. So it's probably about 8,000 different, and yeah, it feels about right. But then when you look at the 90th percentile of that, the social workers, the 90th percentile goes up to $77,000, Whereas the 90th percentile for claims managers is 140,000, so almost double. So the base pay is perhaps not particularly dissimilar, but the range of pay that I guess claims managers are able to achieve is much higher. And the reason for that is obviously claims managers work in a commercial corporate world. They can negotiate salaries as much as they want. There is opportunity to move companies and get higher pay and that sort of thing. Whereas social workers, almost all the funding comes from government, and therefore government can set the pay bands through which social workers get paid. And as you get more senior, you get paid more, but you're still within very much pay bands. And I guess the only way to escape that as a social worker is to move to private, which is an idea, but not many people pay for private social work. There's not such a big market for finding people that really want to get a private social work service rather than obviously something through a government or a non-government organisation. So the pay difference and the way that pay is funded, it makes a big difference, and I think in terms of some of the behaviours and some of the things we'll touch on later. Other big differences: social work tends to be more face to face. I know that more and more claims managers are beginning to think about, you know, rather than doing it over the phone, doing things face to face. But the social work has been doing face to face as an absolutely required practice for many, many years. The sort of people they're working with are tend to be different. You would think that social workers would tend to work with lower socioeconomic classes. But again, as more and more people through things like industry funds get income protection as part of their default cover, I suspect that difference of dealing with people at different socioeconomic backgrounds will change over time. More and more claims managers are not just dealing with high net worth clients, but, you know, effectively all people, all levels of society. And I guess the last thing there is goals. And if you think of social workers, often the goal of the client is, you know, can I get my child back? Can I, you know, and they're almost forced in a way to accept, you know, social work help and that sort of thing. And that can be very different from the experience of someone on claim who isn't necessarily in a hurry to rush back to perhaps a job they don't want, or isn't necessarily desperate to make the change required to, I guess, you know, get back to where they want to be, and in theory, you know, the claim to stop being paid. So there are some differences, and you know, it's not a simple comparison between the two. So before I go on and I guess try and give you all solutions and ideas and that sort of thing, I'll try joke number two, which is an alternative joke for how many social workers does it take to change a light bulb? And it's kind of like a movie where there's different endings, but this one is the light bulb doesn't need to change, it's the system that needs to change. And speaking to a lot of social workers, you will find that that's very much, you know, often it's not what the person's doing wrong, it's something wider than that. And we'll touch on that in the next slide. So narrowing all that research down and the similarities and differences, I sort of started to think about what are the three challenges that I guess I want, or the three ideas and the issues I want to consider. I'm just going to grab a glass of water, excuse me. So these are the three challenges: getting the right measures of success, maybe thinking about the best approach, and also, I guess, how to get that trusted relationship with the claimant. So just thinking about this challenge about, I guess, the right measures of success and the outcomes, a couple of, I guess, social work ideas that came up when through discussions with the guests. This whole idea about what is the goal of your interaction with the claimant or with the customer. And I guess for social workers to jump to a goal of getting back to work is in some ways a concept that they would never do. They would take a step back and they would really say, well, what is the goal for the client? And they would, there's some options they've got around, you know, solution-focused therapy and motivational interviewing. So having conversations with the client to sort of say, you know, if you were to wake up in the morning and all your problems were fixed, how would you know? And having these really open questions with the client. And these days, more and more decisions that doctors are making for insurance claims is it trauma? Is it TPD? Yes, no. Rather than, I guess, the various, you know, areas of grey around how can you stop that? What changes need to make to someone's life in order for them to be ready to change to then ultimately get back to work if that is the end goal? So that kind of social workers are spend a lot of time getting the client ready for change. And in this idea of systems theory is really that within a person, you've got a number of range of almost like a bubble of each of their spheres of, I guess, influence. And it's called systems because it's an interaction between the individual and the system that they're in. And it's a two-way relationship. They can influence and be influenced by. So it's family, it's employer, it's community, it's, you know, friends, it's a, you know, social. It can even be like culture. And it's the social work theory is you almost walk through each of those and you say, where is the pressure that is currently causing you to require help or to get back to work or be suffering what you're suffering? And then you can effectively target that and work through that. And I know with mental health claims, more and more insurance companies are beginning to look at this and realize that they can't just jump to the how do you get back to work question. They've got to really work out, well, what needs to change in your life or where are the pressures in your life in order to enable change to happen. And then one of the flow-ons from this, I guess, is how do you measure things like say the employer as a system, how do you measure within the employer whether it is a place that they can be removed from the pressure a bit? So things like more and more companies are doing things like surveys and, you know, well-being surveys and, you know, trying to measure the company of how good they are at accepting people back into them, which is another, you know, part of how do you measure some of these systems is hard. But this is idea number one. And obviously, at the end of this, I welcome any debates and challenges and comments and at the end of it. So, I guess challenge number two is how do you approach the claimant in the right way to get the best possible outcome? So this is assuming that you know what the goal is. Now, how do you actually do it? And evidence-based practice is a huge concept in social work and has been now for 20 years. And it's also used in health and a number of other similar professions. And why is it used so much? What is it, first of all? I guess it's basically saying what works for whom and under what conditions. That's really as simple as that. And in a social work context, it's not just, you know, what one organization does. It's industry-wide. So it's driven by, often driven by university research. It's often sort of, I guess, mandated down from government or government funding programs to say, you know, these are the best approaches for these people under these circumstances. And it sounds almost robotic. And it's not, because there are so many different theories and social workers, the best ones, are critical of it and can take some of the things but tweak it for each individual person. But it's almost a way of managing that kind of tension that if you're in a profession which is under a bit of pressure and fire and doesn't have necessarily a great reputation, then one of the things you can always fall back on is saying we are using the best research for you or for the client or for the situation that is available as an industry and as you know, internationally. And so therefore you've got quite a solid foundation on which you're doing your I guess, practices. So they've done some research. In 2002, Sydney University did a big research of talking to 400 social workers to say how many of you support this evidence-based practice. And 80% said yes. Yep, we support it. Bizarrely, they thought only 61% of their colleagues supported it. But overall, it's pretty much part of accepted culture now. And, you know, there are some, you know, disadvantages that people don't always have the time to research properly. And if you're just frontline staff following rules and following processes, it's never going to work. But certainly as a, you know, it does as a whole for an organ, for a, I guess a profession, social work relies very heavily on having the best, you know, evidence-based practice when they're making decisions. I did read something that said that there's not enough evidence that evidence-based practice works for it to pass the evidence practice test. So I guess there are still a lot of voices out there that point out some of the flaws in having a very structured system. But I guess from a, you know, insurance company point of view, you know, do we as insurance companies, we all have internal processes and procedures that will say, you know, we know how to deal with the following claims in the following way, but do we really look outside our organization? Do we really get, you know, wider research into that? And again, some companies are doing this, but not all of them. And a lot of them are almost feeling like it's a competition environment, so therefore we're not going to share our thoughts with someone else because they're going to have a better intel. And, you know, if we as an industry want to improve that, then perhaps is one of the thinkings. And I guess the third thing I came across quite a lot, the third aspect was most of the people, I asked the question a lot to claims managers. I said, are your claims management staff generally quite cynical of the customer? And the answer pretty much is probably yes. And you kind of think, well, why is that? And the answer quite often is people hate when people rip them off. And if they feel that they've had to pay a claim or they think that someone's trying to do a dodgy claim, they take it very personally. And it almost sticks with them. If they remember paying a claim and they thought, that person got, you know, a big lump sum payout for their TPD, but you know, they weren't really that bad, and, you know, then that sort of sticks with them. And it's interesting what companies value. And a lot of companies, if they quote things like decline rates over, I guess, return to work or good news stories, then that can create that sort of slightly, you know, we're out to try and get them kind of culture. And, you know, the training that's given, quite a lot of the time the training that's given within life companies is around surveillance and around, you know, medical terms and, you know, trying to catch people out. And the more that happens, you wonder if that's the intention or not. And then secondly, if you're then wanting the customer to have a trusted relationship with your rehabilitation process or with your, you know, company and have a long-term, you know, trust us, we'll help you get back on the road to recovery. If there's a natural, you know, cynicism about some of it, then it's hard to grip that overall balance right. So, and I know that a lot of people at the top of organizations talk a lot about the good things that we are doing as an industry and paying a lot of claims and helping people, you know, make decisions and you know, get respect back and that sort of thing. And that's great, but when it comes down to day-to-day and the claims management side, are we doing the right things in that regard? And it's very much set from the people at the top of the team and the department and those kind of people. I guess social workers also used to do that quite a bit. And there's some examples I've come across that, for example, social workers have been working in the prison system in New South Wales for a number of years. And when they were brought in, first of all, about 15 years ago, they did a lot of work with, you know, trying to get people. So when they were inside, so when they were about to go outside, they were getting the systems in order to come back to, I guess, systems theory and what pressures are. And they did a lot of work on that. And then, but of course, sometimes there would be some, you know, semi-violent incidents, and social workers would have to step in and, I guess, you know, save another social worker or that sort of thing. And of course, when the end of year awards happened for these social workers, was it the ones who got the people back to work and not back to work, but helped them make change in their lives? Or was it the bravery awards for the ones that stepped in and, you know, effectively saved someone's life that got the real recognition? And that happened. So more and more over the last few years, social workers moved to, I guess, a person-centered approach where the person is in the room on all the decisions and is heard on all the decisions. And particularly around sort of disability clients who previously, I guess, were talked over and talked about but never actually, you know, right in the middle of the decision making. So that's really what's happened over the last little while with social work. They've moved to that sort of more person-centered approach. But it still, I guess, comes back to, you know, do people, you know, again, when you meet up at conferences and when claims managers meet up at conferences, do they discuss, you know, the great feel-good stories, or do they say, oh, you should see this one that we found that was doing this, and you know, sharing the stories of the sort of the lengths of surveillance they went to catch out the dodgy. And again, it's those kind of stories that are shared. One of the things that I've seen companies do quite a lot in this, or I've seen hearing companies do, is almost thinking about splitting the claims team to a certain extent, having a group of people who are just focused on the rehabilitation of the customer. So they don't have to make a decision whether the claim is valid or not. They just say, right, we're going to assume the claim is valid, and we're just going to look after that claimant and do what we have to do and work with them, listen to them, and get them back to work. And you know, that's quite successful, because all they're doing is person-centered. That's all they care about. They don't care if it's right or not. That decision's taken away from them. What you then have, of course, is the rest of the team is still potentially declining claims, and you may have an internal conflict there between someone that wants to try and make this a nice slow process and someone else that's saying, can you not close it yet? So it's almost like a nice, interesting short-term solution to a problem, but the long-term solution is obviously, if you really, really want the customer to believe in your rehab and trust that what you're doing is right, then the life insurance company really has to make a change to say, we will trust you first and foremost. And then if the cost of being wrong is we find out that some claims are not valid down the track, then that's worth it. So that's kind of the three thoughts. I will try one more joke before I wrap up, which is, how many social workers does it change to change a light bulb? And the answer that many social workers will give to this joke is actually, I'll do it, but I've got 37 other light bulbs I've got to change first. And probably that's probably a bit like claims managers, I guess, that never-ending workload. It never stops. So I've got to end up, I guess, with some overall thoughts for insurers and then my own personal reflections. The thoughts are just running through, just I guess reiterating some of the points. What is a successful outcome? Is it really getting the person back to work and stopping paying the claim, or is it something wider than that as an industry? How do we really know we're doing the right things with claimants? A lot of companies probably think they do, but do they really? Do we have the research to really show that? Are the organisation systems supporting our values? So when we talk about being customer focused and that sort of thing, does that feed all the way down to the actual, practices within the claims function? And then that whole idea, which is I guess where I'm coming back to, is, you know, do we look outside? I mean, we've been sort of trying to solve this puzzle for many, many years, and certainly it's not an easy solution. But you know, how much do we continue to look outside the industry? I know things like risk cultures begin to look outside the industry a lot more, and I think there's nothing wrong with whatever part of the organisation we're in looking outside the industry. But acknowledging there's no easy solutions for life insurers, there's daily pressure, there's share price pressure, there's, you know, all this stuff. And I guess social workers do have that sort of, there's not that same commercial pressure on social workers. And they do have the time to do the research, and to the government can you know, fund some of this stuff. So it's not an easy one. So then, just wrapping up, my last 2 points of this whole thing. When I went into this 6 months ago, I was convinced I knew the answer would be that the biggest thing that social workers can teach claims managers is how to deal with that emotion of the claimant and the difficulty they're going through and the trauma in their life. And, you know, I thought that would be the answer. And I genuinely thought that people working in claims teams would really feel that and would take it home with them and lie awake at night worrying about, you know, Mrs. Bloggs and not being able to go back to work and their problems. And that does happen occasionally, but almost across the board, it's more that people in claims management teams get stressed when the workflow management doesn't work. So when people have just got a never-ending caseload and complaints coming on and they've not got time to really deal with them, that's when the stresses of you know, claims managers really ramp up. And that tends to be when they will leave organizations or they will be off work sick. And of course, I mentioned this to my social work wife, and that my learning was that not so much that people don't care, but what stresses them out more is the workflow. And she said, well, why is that? And then that got me thinking about, oh dear, is it because, you know, it's not the right system and that sort of thing. But that for me was an interesting personal reflection. And I guess the final one is social workers do have a lot of theories. and it's kind of slightly painful listening to them all and going through them all, but I guess they do, the overall summary is, I guess, social workers have all these theories because what they're trying to do is do it for the client. And really, they have that long-term view that they probably feel good about themselves because they've taken the right approach and they've made it client-centric, and that's really how they're, what gives them, I guess, the joy. It's definitely not money. I did say to one of them, what would it be like if social workers could negotiate their own pay? And it was kind of like, oh, that'd be great. But then, obviously, that would then, you know, get them into similar difficulties that some of the claims managers have. So I think the summary is, it's interesting how much, you know, social workers do actually have to find other ways other than salary to get an awful lot of job satisfaction. And as a result, I think they're a lot more focused on the client. And there probably is some learnings there for insurance companies that we can take away. So that's pretty much it. Welcome any questions. So.
Very much for that, Ian. There were certainly a lot of worthwhile thoughts in there. I personally found it very interesting. So if anybody does have any questions, please come up to the mic, state your name first, and Ian will take it from there.
Thanks, Ian. Anthony Asher. I'm feeling quite proud of myself. I said to Ray Murray as I walked in, I don't know, Ian says, what about social work? I'm sure he's married to a social worker. So I got that bit. Look, I think there are actually huge opportunities for actuaries in this whole space. I mean, talking to a few folk in the health insurance, the NDIS means that there's lots and lots of money going to be redirected in the next few years. A good deal of it will be wasted. There's no doubt about that, because it's instead of being spent by one group of people, it's going to be spent by someone else. So measuring its success and thinking through it is really a big issue. My thoughts on this, I never really dated social workers but physios, so I might have taken a different approach to this, and I'm married to a teacher. But I think within the profession, there are really three things we should be thinking about. I mean, it hits the profession in three areas. One is the actual product design, the second is claims management, and the third is pricing, and they interact. And I've been giving thought particularly to the question of the product design, whether it should. I mean, if you raise the question, social workers say, shouldn't we be paying the benefit rather than rehabilitating? Well, aren't there other things to do? So, should our product designs actually have benefits that don't require people to be rehabilitated, or should we require all our products to force people to get back to work? Now, as a physio, I would tend to sort of. You know, knowing physios, I would tend to go for the fact we'll get the physical things right, and you know, we get people back onto the rugby field in 20 minutes that they sometimes take 10 years to, well, a lifetime of disability for. So I think there really are important issues, and I think talking to my medical friends, really is very important to make sure that we have the right to change doctors, change medical practitioners. Apparently in the UK that's standard practice, it's not here. And some doctors just don't have the will or the firepower to get people back to work. The question I do want to raise, though, is you've mentioned, I think TPD is a disaster. And you've mentioned exactly that point where you say the claims, in a sense, your claims managers find that when they paid the TPD claim, they now feel they've failed. If we took TPD out of the equation, what would we lose?
Blimey. I'm not 100% sure, to be honest, on that. That's a really good question. Taking TPD out. I think TPD certainly causes that lump sum payment, and the different definitions of occupation are problematic. The best solution people want generally is someone to, deal with whatever it is from a disability point of view and then get back to work, because the being back at work or any work that they feel valued in is critical, I guess, to long-term, in my mind, to long-term, happiness, member of society, member of community, support, that sort of thing. I'm not sure whether TPD necessarily does that as the answer, but I can't see. I mean, it obviously fulfills some need, and it's not going to suddenly change overnight, but I get your point. So.
Adam Puska. Thanks, Bully. That was a very interesting presentation. I wanted to... you touched on a few points, but I was curious around, you know, in life insurance, we've got a... You know, we don't have enough claims managers, and obviously maybe we can get some social workers to come across into that area. In your discussions, what do you think would be the main sort of constraints around why they wouldn't want to move across into claims management?
It's not the salary, that's for sure. Through doing this research, a number of the salary questions have made social workers think about jumping ship, I think, so apologies if that has happened. They're put off by... social workers often hate to go into big corporate companies, and they find the atmosphere is not conducive to them being able to, I guess, follow their training and their experiences and their values-based approaches to things. So if a company can create that environment where social workers still feel able to do the right thing by the client, make it person-centered, I guess still use their values, then that works. But that whole point around if the results are going bad for either the department or the company as a whole, and pressure does come onto the claims team earlier probably than some other departments because they've got a faster, they've got a potential lever to operate quicker than other departments. Turning off sales or that sort of thing doesn't change your financials nearly as much as deciding what you do about claims. So I think you've got to create that, and that comes back to that whole question around the team, and is the entire team focused on the customer and the person-centered approach number one, or does it still kind of reward that sort of, or not reward, but does it still acknowledge that need to, I guess, pick up the customers that are fraudulent or that are not genuine claims? So I think a lot of them would be interested in supporting claims teams and to talk about some of these things for sure. My wife certainly is, but whether the long-term atmosphere and environment is right for them, that's the challenge.
Jenny Lyon. I'm sorry, I missed the beginning of the presentation, so if I'm not relevant. But anyway, yesterday in Alan Merton's presentation about Asia, he actually showed us a YouTube clip which was about Great Eastern and the way that they're advertising in Asia. And it's very much focused on you and your life as opposed to death and protecting yourself. So a very positive kind of wellness, health kind of approach. And I wonder if internally organisations start to think about things from that point of view, and that's how they're going to engage their customers, whether that would actually change the environment internally to make people think differently from a claims management point of view as well.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. And it was interesting listening to, I was at a presentation yesterday talking about industry versus retail and discussing SMSFs, and that whole concept that what they're doing is looking at the investment for the whole family is again, I guess, a principle of looking beyond just the individual and their what they cover them for, but looking wider and why that's a success. So I think, yeah, absolutely, things looking beyond a simple one policy, one cover for one person is happening. Whether it will change the environment within the teams or not is, I think, it's still very driven by the specific members who are managing the team and the people above them and how that culture flows down from the organisation. So.
Right, so a question from me. So the question you ask is what can claims managers learn from social workers? So sort of turning that around, what can social workers learn from claims managers?
I see the doors have opened, so maybe... it's interesting. I struggle to answer this, other than social workers they're so passionate they can waffle about all the wrongs in society far longer than I can listen. And I think one of the good things with claims managers is they've learned to be more efficient in their, I guess, decision making and explanations and that sort of thing. So I think social workers have the time and energy to go on forever about you know, what needs to happen and what the changes are. But I think if they were able to at least condense it for the people who are passionate but don't have the same attention span as they do, then that would be useful. So I mentioned that to my wife and there was silence. So anyway.
I think we're done. So thanks again to Ian. So all please a round of applause.